Hello everyone, welcome to the third episode of the Skilled Trades Playbook. I'm Juan Caruso, author of the At Your Best Playbook series. In this episode, I'll be speaking with Larry Crone, who was our general contractor on a massive project several years ago. Larry and his partner Steve have been incredibly successful in the Seattle area. He's definitely quite opinionated, but he'll be very funny as well, so I'm sure you'll enjoy it.
So, Larry Crone, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I didn't start out to be this. I can remember my mom saying after I finished college, she says, get a job, wear your suit and tie, and just be there through retirement. Well, that she was also part of the Depression in the old school and so on and so forth. And I started out that way. I went into retail, and I worked myself up from a beginner in the retail world to a buyer, got fired and took my severance package and bought my first house. It was a wonderful thing. I hated retail, and I always was mechanically inclined, always tearing apart somebody's car. So I changed it from cars to houses. And so I started in on my own house, and I knew that I wanted to stay in the world of construction, but I really didn't know how to market myself. So by dumb luck, somebody knew somebody and said, there's three lots coming up for sale in West Seattle. Do you want to buy those and build spec houses on it? Well, I had the grandiose ideas in the late 80s and early 90s of starting out doing three of these and then going from there. But in order to do those, I had two employees and myself. It's a lot of work, especially when you kind of don't know what you're doing. You know enough to be dangerous. So we, the three of us, built these three houses and a restaurant in between, and a couple of other jobs in between, which proved that we were way too busy, and we couldn't determine what our category should be, except take the money and run. So once I figured out after finishing the spec houses, that wasn't me. I'd rather remodel or do your additions on somebody else's house, because the cash flow is a lot better. When you're building houses as spec houses to be competitive, a lot of times it's only a 10% to 15% money. And unless you build them efficiently, you can't make any money and quickly, because it's up to the realtor to find you a buyer. And a lot of times if the buyer gets turned off on the builder, or the house itself, it becomes blackballed, and you're sitting there month after month with interest. So once I got out of three building spec houses, I decided that wasn't my cup of tea. So what do I do now? So I went into, somebody said, can you do a kitchen for somebody? And then from the kitchen, I went in into somebody else's place. And then it went from there to somebody else's place. And there wasn't a lot of downtime because, one, I took on one of these other two people that were employees as a business partner. And we had a common denominator. And the common denominator was we had families to feed. The second part of that, the third guy wanted to do his own thing in Issaquah, which made him geographically undesirable. And he went his own way, doing medium to high-end houses and additions. And he's done very well. He's still a good friend. In fact, some of his stuff is real envious for us because he's really high-end. He's not making any money, but he's real high-end. So Steve and I found our niche. We do medium to upper-end. And we've got an eye for it. And obviously, we must have done something right because we're on the second generation of those same customers that 30 years ago we were doing. So the kids call and they said, oh, we need this or we need that. And sure, okay. And so we're at a point now where we don't advertise. In fact, just about an hour before this phone call, I got a call from Bainbridge Island looking for a builder. And I said, we're booked a year to three out. And he says, really? And I said, yeah. And so he wasn't a telemarketer. He actually was looking for a contractor. So, well, you can't do it all. So here we are. Right now, since we're hedging towards retirement in the next 3 to 5 years, Steve and I are getting tired of working 40-hour weeks. So we're cutting back to, say, 35-hour weeks. But we've got enough work that people say, well, just do it. And so now we don't even bid a job. We just do it on time material based on a guesstimation of what it's going to cost the customer, which is based on experience. But it took a long time to get to know the experience to make it work right.
Tell me about those early days. One of the things that I think is always so challenging is the business development side. How do you find the opportunities to work and how you compete with others to win a job? That type of insight would be extraordinarily valuable. And then at some point, I'd like to talk about how you started this whole process with no real background. I mean, you didn't go through trade school and...
I've always been mechanically inclined. That meant that I can figure it out. And it kind of made sense. Number two, you surround yourself with the people that are already in that industry that have been friends or you've known. And I've got some of those same people that are good friends to this day. And one is a draftsman, not an architect, but he's also a builder. And Craig he looks at it from a builder's standpoint. How can we build this efficiently rather than from an architect saying, here, we'll do the whiz bang of this and it'll come out looking like that. Maybe. The other one is a friend of mine, Dave Main, who is heavily involved with the Master Builders Association and has been for years. And he's had his ups and downs economically with building spec houses where you used to churn and burn them. You know, as fast as you put the sod down, you're advertising the thing and the paint still might be wet. That was that 10% money where if you're going to turn out 170 houses in a year, that you don't sleep any better than if you're building five houses a year. In fact, you're sleeping a lot less. There's just the people involvement. But it's basically how I started out is, who do you know? And you get involved with him, and they helped. And they directed me to the outside salesman for lumber, the plumbers, the electricians. And so they'll take you under the wing if you're willing to allow them to do the work and so on and so forth. And you just work from there. Now, granted, you change out your subs for whatever reason over the years. They're too busy. They've gone a different direction. They've gone into commercial rather than residential or something else. And so you find another sub, either through your existing subs. Be surprised. It was my electrician that came about due to my bricklayer. I said, do you know anybody that's a good electrician? He said, yeah, this guy we've been around on these several jobs. His name is XYZ. And we ended up using him for several years until he retired. And so I guess you create a niche because this little world of construction has an interwoven thread of who do you know? And that's how I got my subs. I'm comfortable with him and all that. But the key is how we keep our subs. First of all, we're not the cheapest bid, and we will never be the cheapest bid. If somebody comes to me and says, I'm looking for a contractor, I'm going to ask for at least three bids on the job, I'll say, sorry, Charlie, I'll see you later. We, you know, if two bids, fine, because if you're not used somebody, I can understand getting two bids. But we don't bid anymore. We'll give you a written guesstimation of what you could expect to spend based on what we see, and then do it on a time materials. And we always try to beat that price to save the customer. But if you go in saying it's going to cost you $50,000 and you're going to bill them at $75,000 to $100,000, you've become the biggest asshole in the world. And you'll hear always, that contractor cost me an arm and a leg, et cetera, et cetera.
How does somebody coming into the business have the luxury of being as committed to the strategy that you're talking about? I mean, I understand the reasoning and I fully appreciate it, but say you're building your craft, you're good at what you do, you're a carpenter, an electrician, or so on, but now you want to strike out on your own and you're compelled to be one of those three. How do you suggest they do it?
Well, a lot of it's just guts, and then a lot of it's just referrals too. But you got to also make sure that you've got enough under your belt to be a, if you're going to be a general, which means you're the overseer of a lot of different subs coming in to do whatever they do. And then you've got to also know enough from experience that what they're telling you is what makes sense. And you have to be able to say, no, we can't do this here, but you could run it over there, you know, in plumbing issues or electrical. But you got to have a give and take too. You can't be just, you know, this is where I want it and I don't give it a rip. You've got to do a give and take. We have built our business basically on that kind of thing. We also, as business partners, Steve and I, what's worked for us is he prefers to do the books. I hate doing books. So I'm the front man with the customer. I work with him and all that. He hates working with you. He hates your guts right now, John. So, you know, it's just the natural way of things. So it's a yin and a yang. So for us, it's worked because one's taking care of one thing and I'm doing the other thing. And the same with the subs. He'll manage the end of the subs. I'll manage bringing them in and so on and so forth. There has never been one job in 30 plus years that we've been business partners that we never bid the job separately. We always go over, you know, we'll sit down, we'll go over the plans and so on and so forth. And he'll say, this is going to cost you this because of that. And I'll say, no, it's going to cost you more than that because we ran into it on the last job. We don't bid a job by the square foot. As a remodeler, you can't necessarily do it as a square foot. In new construction, yeah, they got it down to a square foot for framing. They got it down to the square feet in foundation work. But that's fast track. On remodeling and additions, it's not going to float. You've also got the unknowns. When you are updating or reviewing and rebuilding an existing, you're going to run into bugs that were not where you expected it. So you always have to have a budget set aside for unknown.
As well we know.
Oh, yeah, you do know that one.
Tell me something. Imagine yourself talking to somebody that is considering becoming a general. What would you tell that person? What kind of skills, what kind of background would he or she have to have at this stage? Describe what it would take to consider a solid platform.
Well, you're going to have to have some computer skills. You're going to have, and a lot of these people are going to now request on with an iPad, you know, your sketches, everything for getting a permit now is strictly done online. you can't hand a piece of paper in anymore. And you're going to get to that point with your customers that are either going to be too busy, they want to see it online, or they want to see a sketch of this or that, a three-dimensional of that. And there are programs out there for that. If you're just starting out and you want to be a contractor, I would recommend joining the Master Builders Association and spending a year or so just getting to phase with other contractors that are starting out and so on and so forth. You're always going to find those that have been around and they're the good old boys, but you also got the new guys coming in. And so you start networking, and that's literally a lot of this is just networking. Who do you use? Who do you want? But you also got to decide on what you want to be. As a general contractor, you can't do it all. You can't be a spec builder and then do a commercial job, say a storefront, and then do an addition and remodel. And I started out trying to do that, and it bit me big time. So we just decided on using your money and doing remodels. It's a lot safer. It's a lot more involved because I'm dealing with the customer, and that customer is what you've got to recognize. And so if the customer is there's four types of personalities, and you got to recognize them. And there's the analytical. They'll never make a decision. They'll sit there and they'll say, well, see, if we do this, do that, but you know, if we move this over to there, they'll sit there and they'll beat it to death in their own mind about analyzing why should it cost this much. You also got the driver. The driver is a guy who says, I don't care how you throw it together, I want it to look like this on this date. Can you do it? Now be careful of somebody like that, because they're probably lawyers and they can be the biggest assholes in the world. Next one will be who do we cover? We covered the analytical, and then you got the amiable. And the amiable will be the one that'll say, well, what do you think? Well, I was suggesting you do this, that. Well, what else do you think? I don't know. And they'll go around, they'll beat you to death, just time burning, because they can never make a decision. And then the last one is you got the expressive. They're the kind of person you want to play poker with, because it can't keep a straight face. And so they're, and everybody's got a little bit of everything in them. So if you can see the strong points and you work towards those strong points, if a guy's a driver and he wants it done on this date, he doesn't really want a lot of the detail. He'll want to know, can you make it? Can you make this work? But if you got the analytical, God help you. They'll just sit there and rattle. Can we redesign and maybe move this over here? So while I can't make that decision, and so on and so forth. So that's my job. Steve hates working with all those guys, because Steve could be, you know, I could be, I've got a long fuse, and then I become an asshole. Steve's always an asshole. He admits it. So we were going to change our name to Two Crabby Old Guys. And that probably would have worked a lot better, but we don't need your business. We're too busy.
At the beginning, you said something that I wanted to clarify. When I asked you about somebody thinking in terms of becoming a general contractor, what would you recommend? And one of the things that you alluded to, and I wanted to clarify, was the networking element. It sounded to me like you were saying, before you make the decision, start networking a lot before you ever pull the trigger. Is that what you mean?
Somewhat, but also networking with other contractors, and that's where the master builder situation came in. And also, don't be afraid to ask, who do you know? Who would you recommend? They also have a committee that does work for the betterment of the new requirements, you know, for instance, L&I. They could be your enemy in the sense that labor and industries can cause you a lot of financial woes. The Master Builders has programs on how you get around that sort of thing. And the big hot button is, too, asbestos. The old days, you'd tear it out, throw it away. You know, that's it. Today, you've got to have the guys in the suits and they have to test the air, and you have to deposit it in a certain way, and so on and so forth. And it adds expenses to a job, big time. So if you're starting out, you got to start small, you know, and do baby steps before you get a little bigger. If you want to fail, I guarantee you, you need that cash flow. But if you're guaranteed to fail, you go out and lease for 7 years this $60,000 to $80,000 truck that's jacked up in the air, and with the pipes on the side and the mud wheels and tires. First of all, I'll know, well, there's a guy that's about to go under because he can't afford his payments on the sucker, or two, he's making too much money to be able to afford that anyway. Start out conservatively with a good average truck, and I can think of three builders that have 200,000 miles, including me, on a good Chevrolet pickup, and we're content with that rather than going out and buying a new truck. It's not the truck that sells the job. It's your abilities and your sense and your business sense to make it happen. Don't look like your king contractor, because you'll turn off a customer faster than anything. And the other thing is, do not put bumper stickers on your car. Do not put ones that favor whatever your political views are. Never put one of those on your car, because a customer potentially is coming up and then they see your bumper sticker and you're going to lose that job. Doesn't matter. You could be Jesus saves you, you know, whatever. But some customer is going to see your opinion on the back bumper of your truck and you're going to lose that job.
That's great. You guys have always, for the last 30 years, you've always been the two-man operation from a general contracting perspective. Have you ever built up a workforce of a few guys that you have on payroll?
No, not necessarily. What we do have, and this is why we found a niche where a bunch of us small general contractors, what's going to kill you are employees. I don't care, business be damned. If you've got a good employee and you run out of work, that guy's not going to sit around. He's going to get hired by the next guy, and you're out of that sort of thing. So, and when you have an employee, you got L&I, you've got all the insurances for the state, you've got a myriad of things. And if you don't build that into your bidding so that you're covered with all this and the unknowns, it's not going to work. So we found out way back, I wanted to have employees and get bigger, but we found that with no employees, we still got the jobs and we got them done and we could sleep at night. Here's how. We have kind of a group of other generals who do exactly the same thing we do, get their hands dirty, and also can farm it out. And on occasion, when we need the extra help, they'll come work for us. Well, they're already licensed and bonded, so we write a check to them. And we don't have them as employees. They're helping us out. Same on electrician. You want to borrow ours? He's not as busy as what you need, and then take them. Or the plumber. So we sort of got our own little world of subs within the contractors. And if you're really busy on a job, you hire one of these contractors to come do the dirty work for you, and then you take off from there.
How big is this little network of yours?
There's probably six different generals within that group. Now, they're also, the demise of it is, we're all getting older, and we're not bringing any newer ones on at this point. But we're not looking for the work. It finds us.
You're all in the same boat, huh?
Yeah, pretty much. I guess if you've done it right and have and not script on the thing, and your ethics as well as your sense of putting it together seem to come together, and when you finish the job you can put your name on it, then hallelujah, then it pays off in the long run. It may not in the short, but in the long run, they'll come back to you.
You've raised the term cash flow 3 or 4 times during this conversation. It's the lifeblood, isn't it?
You bet. No question about it. Here's the thing. Here's also one of the ways that if we're going to look for a sub and we need a new one, and they look at us the same way, what we would do, let's say we pick a drywaller. Let's say I need a new drywaller because ours is busy or he just doesn't have the time or for some reason. And if he can't supply you with the name of somebody that can do, what you do is you always call the supply house of drywall. They're the wholesale distributor, and you ask, give me 3 names of guys that do, say, remodeling in Seattle. And they'll give you 3 names for sure because, one, they do business with them all the time. 2, they always do good work. They never hear any complaints. And 3, and this is the critical one, they always pay their bill and take their discounts, if available, on time. We also have never not taken our discounts. We always pay on time or before. We still follow we prefer to wait, the first of the month, you send us an invoice or a statement. We always pay off of invoice, not statement. So we compare the two, but we do take our discounts, and we always pay on time. So the key is, how do you do that? When we start a job, you've always heard these nightmare things where, we hired a contractor, we gave him $15,000, never heard from him again. And so to get us around that, we'll ask for the same thing, say, but we'll ask for it the day we start dismantling your house, while we're physically in your house, going to work, so you know that we are there to as a commitment.
Honestly, as a two-man operation committed to your livelihood and all that, with the reputation that you have, clearly you have no choice but to continue down this path. And it's served you so well. It really has.
Yeah. Why would we change? But on the flip side, we're not afraid anymore to fire a customer.
Tell me about that.
Well, when we started out, the guy said, screw it. I don't want you guys. I'm going to go somewhere else or whatever. And that's where we found over years on some of the experiences, you never work for lawyers. Unless you personally know the lawyer, you want to get paid. And if you've got a contract, and again, a good contract will come out of the master builders that you can use with your customer and all that sort of thing. If you got somebody that wants to rebuild your contract to their way of timing and so on and so forth, and what their expectations are, you run. You don't even walk. You just run away from that one. That's just, one. But some of these customers, okay, getting back to the different kinds of personalities. Okay, let's say you start the job and you got an amiable. So you're getting down to the finished product. You've got cabinets going. Let's say it's a kitchen. You got countertops. An amiable cannot make a decision. What color are the cabinets going to be? I don't know. And the other one is, what countertops do you want? Do you want granite? Do you want marble? Do you want a backsplash that is complimentary, or do you want the same material? You'll go around and it'll be a time burner. You want to walk away from that one too. Now, I'm not trying to get you to walk away from all your customers, but you got to be aware of time is money.
Yeah, no, that's good advice.
And so going back to the lawyer, if you do a lawyer, you always do the prick factor. That means you add at least 10 to 15% to it because he's going to negotiate it down. And so if he negotiates it down to the asking price to begin with, it's a win-win. But you got to be smart enough to understand the lawyer and also how to bill it. Now, another one you don't want to do not do work for real estate agents trying to sell a house. Ran into that once upon a time, only once. They said, we're looking for somebody to finish this basement. We need a cheap job. Just get it done so we can sell this house. you run as fast as you can, because the house will sell. And then the realtor will say, well, we had a contractor that did the work. Well, here's his card. You might want to call him and get him in here to fix the thing. Not going to happen, lady. If you want decent work, you're going to pay decent price. So there's another one that you're throwing out the door. Let's see. Who else have we thrown out the door? They'll come to me. But yeah. But this is experience. You can't do everybody. And so you want the ones that are comfortable and the ones that pay and the ones that keep coming back. Like I said, we're on second generation. We got the kids coming and they don't even argue. They just say, can you do this? When can you?
Tell me, let me ask the question from a different angle. Who should stay away from thinking about becoming a general contractor?
Boy, let's see. You got to be able to get dirty. You got to be able to physically work, and you've got to have business sense. You've got to understand the customer and be able to sell the customer too. Now, what helped me a lot of this is at one time I took a Sales Training Institute's course on outside sales, because at one time I was in outside sales. And I learned an awful lot in that on how to close a deal. And don't be afraid. That's one of the things. If the customer is going back and forth and, oh, I don't know about this, don't be afraid to ask, do you want me to do this job or not? Close the sale. Like saying, I could start this in a week or 2 weeks. Are you ready for me to do that? And that might put them on the edge of trying to do, but, you know, rather than waste your time, then get on with it and go to somebody else. You just experience, and you got to be willing to take that experience, and you'll get bit a couple of times, but as long as you don't get bit a big amount and have that big ass truck sitting out there jacked up in the air, you should be okay to survive.
Is there anything I didn't ask you? Is there anything you want to volunteer?
Yeah. In this, you know, everybody thinks that a general contractor is the top of the mountain, not necessarily so. There's nothing wrong with being a sub and being efficient at it. I'll give an example. If you're an electrician, now granted, to be a certified electrician, passing the test and all that and taking the courses and spending the hours working with somebody, all you need all the rest of your life is a bucket. And in that bucket, you're going to have some basic tools, hand tools, and a tester or two, and you can always be busy the rest of your life. Nothing wrong with that. Number two, plumber. Plumber's always going to be busy. Sure, it's stinky at times, but it's all, you know, it's not always new construction. You know, there's always remodeling. There's always this. You know, there's perks in every job. You don't have to be a big contractor type thing. You can be comfortably a sub. Drywall is a hard job. Insulation is a tough job in the sense of if you're the one that's doing it, but somebody does, and those that are good with it know how to work well. Excavators, you know, moving dirt, backfilling. Gosh, if I had to redo it again, I would love to be on a small track hoe or something like that. Digging foundations and leveling out. Those guys that are good at that know how to load the dirt, get rid of it, leave enough to backfill and so on and so forth. That's a skill that a lot of it's by eye, just knowing and judging. However, you've got big insurance deals there to deal with because you're digging in dirt. You don't have to be a general just to have you can have fun at these other things, but keep in mind there is heavy insurances due on every sub, including every contractor, and they're due every year. And so if you don't build that into your job, you are going to go broke because all these unknowns behind there that, you know, the cost of submitting plans, there's nothing the city does that doesn't involve a check. Nothing that you can do to be legit if you don't have your card that says you're a general contractor. All these fees that are buried behind, they've got to be loaded in somewhere that somebody's got to pay for them, and the customer has to pay their share. You know, and then the another thing that we haven't touched on is markup versus margin. If you're a newbie starting out and you don't know the difference between markup and margin, you're going to go broke. The difference is markup is a means to get a margin. And, you know, the thing is, well, I get a 25% markup on everything. Well, that doesn't give you a 25% margin. It gives you a 20% margin. How do you make ends meet if you need that 5% for insurance purposes, gasoline, and everything else? The old fourth grade rule was divide the whole number by the fraction, and you'll get your margin. So, for instance, if it's, let's say it's a $100 bill, and that's your cost, but you want to make 25%, that means that the cost is 75%. So divide your whole number, $100, by 0.75, which that's, and that'll tell you what the 100% is going to be when you go to sell it. But so many people would say, I'm going to make 25% margin, so I'm going to take cost 1.25 times your cost, and that's going to be my margin. No, that's going to be a short margin.
That's a good point.
It is counterintuitive, but you're absolutely right. I mean, you're looking at, for that $100 or for that dollar, you've got to charge the, what is it, $1.34 to get a 25% margin?
Yeah. Or you divide the whole number by the fraction and you'll get there quicker.
Well, that's a pithy little thing to put in there.
That's a critical thing to put in there.
You know, clearly one of those things that, you know, when you're just starting out with little or no experience, you're marking everything up and you're thinking, that's my money. No, not really. Just like that, you know, driving that big truck, and that big truck serves no purpose other than to give you a good feeling in your tools and your ego until, you know, at some point that bill comes due.
Yeah, look at your insurance and your maintenance on that alone and gasoline. Unless you're hauling your equipment from here to there and all that sort of thing and writing it off. And today's rules on write-offs, I don't think are as good as they used to be. You add that, you add the insurances that you need for your business, whether you're a sub or whether you're a general contractor into it. And that's all those unknown fees that you got to start to, you know, start your job. So, you know, and then you got to learn too, depending on what the process is. If you're starting out and you think, I'm going to have this done in 2 months, it's going to be 4 months. And if you, because you're going to run into things that you weren't aware of. And so once you get past making those mistakes, you'll start learning to double what you think it should be. You're a hero then if you get it done in less than the time you projected to the customer. And you want to be a hero, not an asshole.
So what advice would you give your younger self to learn sooner or avoid altogether? It can be about your profession or it can be life in general. Just what advice would you give your younger self about that?
If you're in a business, especially starting out, actually it doesn't matter what business you're in, the two rules that you cannot avoid are, one, never assume a thing. And two, your follow-up is most important. If you forget one of those two, you're going to fail. Your subs will find a day that we couldn't make it, but you had assumed they were there. And unless you follow up with a phone call in the morning or text or something like that, I'm expecting you at this time or whatever per our conversation, you're going to fail because you've got too many dominoes that are going to start falling. Never assume a thing, and your follow-up is most important.
Excellent. Have a good one, big guy. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Skilled Trades Playbook. Larry's a great guy and always a character, so I hope you enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to reading the comments on this episode, and please make sure that if you can think of anything I can do to improve these episodes, you let me know. Check out the show notes for links and other information, and definitely hit that subscribe button. That way you can continue receiving these episodes with great people sharing their insights and opinions about the skilled trades and closing the skills gap. Thank you. Have a good one.